I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Utah, USC. The Utes battle the Trojans for a chance to play in back-to-back Rose Bowls. Pac-12 championship game coverage on The Zone is presented by UCCU. Love where you bang. Right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
To be able to be in that game now for four years is a real testament to, you know, our football team, the talent level of players that we have in the program, the, you know, just how dedicated they are to what they do and how bought in they are.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Jake Hatch sitting in for Scott Mitchell, who's down in Vegas. We just chatted with him a few minutes ago. Boy, lots of coverage from Vegas. KSL 5 Television, The KSL Sports Zone. We've got so many guys down there, and so it's just really been really a fun go to be able to jump in with all these guys who are covering this thing. And to be able to go, you know, I mean, like Kyle said, it was essentially 4 years out of five, yeah, if you want to count the COVID year, right?
He refuses to count it, though. He said four straight because the COVID year doesn't count.
He hated that year. Like he
a lot of people did.
He grew. He was like, his heart shrunk three times that day, like, or that year. You know, like he was the Grinch of. Okay. He was so hard to remember. That's when the mullet came out. That's, yep, like when the big hair came out. Yep. That's when like the scruffy pirate beard kind of came out, and he was over it.
Yeah,
like he was so grumpy during that year. Think about where Utah is right now. Where are they in the power rankings of the Pac-12? And if a second championship happens tonight for the Utes, where are they on that in the history of the Pac-12? Because they haven't they've only been in the league for 11 years, right?
Yeah.
And so you're not going to get the same type of recognition as a lot of these other teams because you're not a charter member of the old Pacific Six or whatever it used to be, you know, before. And Oregon State's like, we were there before everybody. It's like, no, yeah, but you still stink. So where is Utah on the power ranking order? Where do they put themselves historically in the Pac-12? If they get a win like this and win their second Pac-12 championship, doing it last year over Oregon and then this year over USC, there's bonus points for beating the top names in the conference on your way to doing that.
Like, there's the historical names. You all know those. The USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington. Those are the
big dogs.
Big dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Utah's relative brief tenure, that's as good of a run as anybody's had in recent memory in the Pac-12. For what Utah is built from, think about this. They had a pretty good run that very first year in the Pac-12, Alex. They came agonizingly close to playing in that first Pac-12 championship game. Mm-hmm. Lost that game to Colorado, disappointing. The next 2 years, 5-7, and there's a lot of question marks. Is Kyle Whittingham capable of really getting this team over the hump and making them a true Power 5 team? Well, what have they done since then? They have steadily climbed and climbed and climbed. In the last four out of five seasons, they have played for the Pac-12 title. That's as good of a run, in my mind, as any team in Pac-10, Pac-12, go back to Pac-8, I guess, history, because it's been a really, really fast climb for Utah, but they've got staying power at the same time. That's the good news. This is not a flash in the pan, build up, make it once, and then fall back. They have consistently stayed in the mix for half of a decade now.
So I was I always look at the bowl projections kind of from everybody, mm-hmm. and just it's like when you fill out multiple brackets for your NCAA tournament, and you go, "Hey, bit. I had Chaminade beating, I guess Chaminade's Division II team, but I had UMBC beating Virginia.
I had that 16 on my bracket,
yeah. on your bracket because you filled out 14 brackets and you did one that was a totally idiotic one, and that's how you picked it, right?" Mm-hmm. So I picked the bowl projections that I look at and go, okay, there's very few out there by most of the big publications that have Utah in the Rose Bowl. Most of them have the setup with – and I was looking at Brett McMurphy. I really like Brett McMurphy's kind of take on stuff, he does a good job.
He's pretty tight in on that stuff, yeah.
He's got Georgia, USC, and the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. So that's your 1-4 right there. The implication being, of course, USC takes care of business tonight against Utah.
Yeah, they win.
Then he has TCU and Michigan playing in that other one as the 3-2 right there in the Fiesta Bowl. The Rose Bowl for him is Washington-Penn State, which we kind of went through and said, all right, Penn State would be the invite. Because the Rose Bowl and you – it's like Ohio State and the Rose Bowl are both like trying to get ahead of the other one going, yeah, we actually don't even want Ohio State. Yeah, we didn't even actually want the Rose Bowl. Like, I don't care for that. Blah, a tournament of what? Roses? Blah.
Yeah.
Not even my favorite flower. Like, it starts to get real weird when you poo-poo the Rose Bowl. And when the Rose Bowl says, we've had you too many times.
Yeah, you've come too recently too many times. We're you know, there's this other team over there in State College. we want them instead.
Yeah, what's wild is Penn State, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you'd have a couple guys who would sit a bowl game because nowadays there's millions of dollars on the line. If you're like a guaranteed first or second round pick, maybe there'd be somebody who missed. But I don't think Ohio State did themselves any favors last year saying, we're going to sit all of our major guys. Like here, C.J. Stroud's going to play, but all of our best wide receivers are not going to be in and open the door for Najigba to have the day that he did. But they have Washington, Penn State. And the idea is also Washington goes to the Rose Bowl because they would be the next highest ranked college football playoff ranked team. And the Rose Bowl said, that's the priority for us. Yeah. One, we can pick whoever we want. Okay. But the priority that we use is, if your college playoff ranking is higher than the other team that was technically the second place team, it's beautiful. This is where the system's messed up, and it could get better. A 10-2 Washington team is sitting around, and they could improve their status just based off of anything that happens this weekend.
Well, and that's the thing about this is you look at the schedules that both the Utes and the Huskies have played. Washington lost to Arizona State, Alex. They lost to one of the worst teams, if not the worst team in the Pac-12 this year. Meanwhile, let's just say things work out the way Brett McMurphy's projecting them. USC does win, they advance to the playoff. Well, Utah will have played USC twice, while Washington didn't even play them once. But somehow, Washington gets to leapfrog Utah?
Right. Now, people have a problem with it, but again, it's a 10-2 team.
And that's the thing. They've got the 10 wins next to their name. They'll be a single-digit ranked team. Meanwhile, Utah's 9-4 and doesn't look necessarily as glamorous, and that's why the Rose Bowl probably opts for Washington.
As a guy who grew up in – who spent a lot of time in the Seattle area and rooted for Washington a lot of my life, Washington and the Rose Bowl is a pretty classic draw.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they're there a lot. And I think that type of a matchup, Washington-Penn State, that is a classic mm-hmm. of two, pretty, not blue blood. Penn State's a blue blood program,
they
I
are.
Guess.
Yeah.
Washington's not, but they're, still a major brand. So that would be big for them. But they have, I wanted to make sure that I double checked what the Utah version of this would be, because I think that they would be, where'd they put the Utes?
McMurphy's?
McMurphy's. What did he
put? He has him in the Holiday Bowl.
Holiday Bowl. So yes. He has him in the Holiday Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting one. And I don't think, and it just is, it's wild to see. You saw that Kansas and Missouri, that whole thing went south?
We can't get the border war because Missouri, an SEC team, we're in the SEC. We're a big dog.
Sure you are.
We don't want to play Kansas.
No. That doesn't look good.
We don't want to play the Jayhawks.
All right. On the line here with us, Sam Farnsworth from KSL5 Television. Hopefully the phone line will cooperate. Anybody who's around that stadium, it's a drop zone. So, Sam, how's Vegas so far, buddy?
Look, I blame everything on the Raiders. I mean, come on, let's be honest. let's be honest, they built a stadium that once you're inside, like, they don't want anything leaving, right? So I'm just saying, I was down there on the field, my phone was ringing, I picked it up, and it immediately just died. So I am now right outside Allegiant Stadium, but I am here. Yes, I am here in Las Vegas.
Well, spoken like a true Broncos fan there.
Well, what are you talking about?
Now, listen, tonight's matchup is interesting for so many reasons, but it definitely feels different. How does it feel different for you this year's game versus last year's?
Well, definitely, the University of Utah definitely feels a lot more like an underdog coming into this game, right? Even though they beat USC earlier this season in that high-scoring shootout, the one-point win, the thrilling victory, it was probably one of the most exciting games in the Pac-12 this entire season. You still kind of get the feeling that they're coming in as the underdog. They still have a lot to prove, whereas last year they had that momentum just rolling with them, right? They'd beaten Oregon 2 weeks prior, and then they came to the Pac-12 and did it again. And just did it in dominant fashion. I think that's the biggest difference. I think it's the obvious difference, but it kind of feels that way too, that they have that underdog identity. The question is, are the Utes going to use that as an identity, as a chip on their shoulder as they go out on the football field today and try to prove all the naysayers or disbelievers wrong? And the funny thing is, I see, depending on what you're looking at, I see the Utes as favorites in certain situations, right, for this game, and certain I don't know who decides who's favorites, if it's the bettors or whoever, right? But this is definitely one of those games though where it's got that feel to it. Even though they're in the end, it kind of has that feel to it that I would not be shocked if there's a upset looming here with the University of Utah crushing USC's whole season hopes of going to a playoff.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, Sam, I don't know how much of a chance you've had to kind of wander around, but do you have a feel, I guess, for the disparity between the fans? Is it 50-50, 60-40? Where are things leaning in your mind?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've actually seen a lot of Utah fans, which I was wondering, because we for example, KSL Sports, the TV side of it, uh-huh. We weren't going to leave until like 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock this morning and just drive down here. But then our weather department was telling us about the storm coming in a couple days ago, and they're like, no, you need to leave Thursday. So we left yesterday, and I've been curious to know if enough Utah fans changed their itinerary to get here in time or not. Now, whether they did or they didn't, I'm seeing a lot of red. I've seen more Utah red than I have USC
whatever
red, maroon, whatever color you want to call that.
Crimson. So, did they call it crimson? Okay. I think they do or something like that. Both of them are crimson.
So how is Utah crimson also? That's the question.
Right, yeah, exactly. I have been seeing a lot over at the hotels and here at the stadium so far. So hopefully that's a good thing. George Klyovkov said in his presser yesterday that it is a sellout and they're expecting more than 61,000. The question is, will all those tickets be used? We'll find out. I mean, hey, for everyone who saw the game last year, who was at the game last year, who watched it, whatever, you know that Utah showed up very well to the Pac-12 championship last year. I would expect it to be the same this year.
Do you think Kyle Whittingham is sitting on a resignation, a stepping down after this season, if there's a certain result, if they do win this game in this Pac-12 championship, they go to the Rose Bowl again. Is there a possibility, or is there anywhere in the realm of possibility that Kyle Whittingham would say, "Hey, this year I can't do it anymore. I've loved my time here." He's talked right about the disgust that he has for the NIL stuff and the transfer portal, kind of where that's going. That's got to be absolutely draining. Do you think that Kyle Whittingham is maybe shorter time than his contract says in his job?
You kind of get that feel, right? Even just a return trip to the Rose Bowl might be enough. If they win the Rose Bowl, I think that's his sunset to walk off into, right? It just feels like that's what it would be. I've talked with someone that's pretty close to the program, and his observations are that Kyle just doesn't have the same energy this season. You know, that
I don't know if desire is the right word, but it's just, it's not as strong this year as it has been in years past. And he kind of feels like this could be very close to the end. You know, he's just running out of that energy, out of that. You can blame him, right? He's been doing it for so long. He's done it very well. And like you said, he's been vocal about it. He doesn't necessarily like the direction that college football is going with NIL and how that's affecting the transfer portal and things like that now. So for me, my opinion is if Utah gets back to a Rose Bowl, especially in a scenario where they're not expected to get back in, but they're able to get there again, I think that almost feels like that's celebration enough to finish off a career with two straight Rose Bowls. Now, I'm not saying he would leave at the end of the year, but it just sets the table nicely where if he wanted to go out, win or lose in a Rose Bowl game, that would just be a really nice way to call it a career.
Okay, so Sam, the game tonight, where do you think it tips? Is there like an X factor in your mind that's going to prove to be the difference, whether it's a player, a unit for either team? Where do you think this game tips on its head?
So I'll answer for a player and a unit. I think it tips. We've got to see a lot from Utah's offense. It's like similar to what we saw in the first game,
yeah.
Right? The both teams scoring into the 40s. USC's offense is just such a well-oiled machine. They're so good. We know they're going to score points. They're going to rack up the yardage. Caleb Williams is amazing. They're going to do their thing. Utah's defense is the number one scoring defense, the number one defense for yards in the Pac-12. But even then, we saw what happened the first time these two teams met. Can they slow down Caleb Williams enough in this game? They might be able to, but ultimately what it comes down to is if Utah's offense can keep pace or even be a step or two ahead of USC's offense. And for the one player, it's clearly Cam Rising, right? Since that USC game, when he kind of banged himself up a bit, I don't know what your guys' opinions have been, but he has not been the same quarterback. He's had some good stats at times, but still he's been he's just been making mistakes that we haven't seen him make in the last season and a half. And some of whether that's an injury thing or what, I don't know, but he's just not playing at the level I think you'd expect him to play at. So that's the one player. Cam has got to be his very best in this game, and he's got to be the reason why the Utah offense is a step or two ahead of USC's offense in this game. If not, I just don't see a way Utah can win.
It's interesting how people just go, yeah, Caleb Williams, automatic Heisman Trophy kind of winner there. And it was because yesterday we were talking to, I think it was Matt Zemek, wasn't it, from Trojans Wire. He was like, hey, honestly, it was after that Utah game that he kind of turned it on. Like that was a game for him that was kind of a turning point. Mm-hmm. But that was also pretty far into the season. And yeah, they're 11-1. But if Caleb Williams was Utah's quarterback, would he be the automatic Heisman Trophy winner?
No, he wouldn't be. You know, even if Utah was 11-1 with Caleb Williams, right? Because you also have to look at the tools that Caleb Williams has. He's got arguably the best wide receiver in the nation, you know, as well to throw to, and he's just got so many options. A solid offensive line. It's just the perfect combination, you know. Combination of quarterback and coach always works, and obviously that's a great one that he's got too. So no, I mean, if Cam, you know, I'll just say Cam Rising because he is Utah's quarterback. If Cam Rising's got 34 touchdowns and 3 picks and 3,000 yards and is 11-1, is he a Heisman Trophy finalist? Probably not. But would his name come up in it? Yeah, for sure. But I mean, Caleb Williams had all that momentum coming with him into the season already. And he's backed it up with the way he's played. And so I think that's part of the reason. And then, of course, USC, you know, their tradition, what do they got, like 7 Heisman Trophy winners, if you count Reggie Bush. And so,
if you count O.J. Simpson.
Oh, right.
Yeah, there you go. So,
how dare. I'm the one who said that. I'm a bad person now, huh? There. Everybody's like, there was a line. You just crossed the Heisman Trophy sacred line there. Come on. Get over yourselves. Sam, we got to get out. It's a break time for us, and I know cool. You got stuff to do as well. Live shots tonight from Las Vegas. I'm assuming you guys have already scouted out some pretty cool places. Let's get it going, huh?
Yeah, we will. We'll be on KSL Channel 5 at 5 p.m. and again at 10 p.m. after the game.
There you go.
Sweet.
Dial in. Get KSL Sports Live. Cool. Thanks, Sam. We'll talk to you again, man.
See ya.
There you go. There's old Sam Farnsworth. I love how I made the, oh, that was such an inappropriate.
Well, that's to be honest.
Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush is the one who gets a Heisman Trophy. Think about it now. Caleb Williams made 10 times what Reggie Bush made when he was at USC.
Okay, here's the thing. I work with Patrick Kidd on a daily basis.
Yes.
And let's just put it this way. That was a PK moment. That was absolutely something PK would have brought up, honestly.
You know what? I feel honored. I feel honored then. But I love that you guys were like, oh. Jeremy was like, Jeremy has his hands up like, why would you do something like that? I was like, come on. I'm not like saying, I'm saying, come on.
Yeah. Well, your point is well taken. Like,
you guys, listen, so sensitive, you guys. All right, we'll take a break. Jeez, we'll come back. We've got our What Are the Odds Around the Corner Championship edition of What Are the Odds. Plus, I bet because Jake's here, we're going to sneak in a soccer What Are the Odds.
Sweet,
as well.
Let's do it.
Or do we call it football? All right, we'll come back. More to go. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.